What does nurturance mean within the society? And of course, I must make the comment that I have not been surprised, and I commend the males who are here, but I have not been surprised this week that the majority of my attendees have been women. That still says something about our modern society. Either that, or they don't like my teaching style, which I'm open to too. But I think that it still is interesting that we, as a society, consider nurturance a female-owned concept, perhaps. And I want to just go back and look at where we have come from historically. In the Bible, in ancient transcription, nurturing is a masculine as well as a feminine attribute. Looking at the ancient texts and the ancient interpretations, males are consistently involved in infant care in ancient Hebrew society. There are a variety of references in biblical texts to support that view, that the male shared in nurturing of young children. Tenderness toward child life, appreciation of parents for their children, and children for their parents, all of these are features of the Bible, which the most superficial reader cannot fail to observe. Materials such as Samuel's rearing by Eli in 1 Samuel, Jacob's attachment to Joseph in Genesis 37, and Benjamin in Genesis 44, and David's relationship to Absalom, shown by his grief at his son's death in 2 Samuel, provide evidence of the father-son bond. The "my son" passages in Psalms and the instructions in Proverbs concerning the parent, father, and mother-child relationship, Proverbs, provide further insights. Other passages show the father to be responsible for discipline in Deuteronomy and instruction in religious and livelihood matters. Also in Deuteronomy. The importance of a child, especially a son, to a father is shown by passages in Psalms, which portray a father's joy in his children, and by instances in the lives of righteous persons where God's highest reward for faithful service is children. Examples of children as God's reward occur for Sarah and Abraham in Genesis, Rachel and Jacob, Manoah and his wife, Ruth and Boaz, and Hannah and Elkanah. These and other passages suggest a strong father-child concern and attachment for the child's conception from the child's conception forward. So that gives us just a little sense of Old Testament consideration for the nurturing role of fathers. And in a Sumerian letter from 1900 BC, the father exhorts his son, this is other ancient text, to continue with his schooling, to work diligently, not to loiter in the streets, to be humble before his tutors, teachers, and overseers, to learn from the past, and to pursue humanistic rather than materialistic endeavors. There are some other interesting anthropological views. Now, I've looked at the Hebrew and ancient society views. And in terms of anthropology and looking at the sociologic history of nurturing, there are a lot of nomadic cultures, tribal cultures, focused particularly on agriculture. This is sporadic. There's not enough consistency to make a generalization. But there are a variety of nomadic cultures in which nurturing is the male responsibility. Males in small agricultural tribes are indeed intimately involved in nurturing infants. In virtually all tribal society, the male has responsibility for teaching the young, particularly the male children 2 to 5 years, and to help with the crops and herds. So those are some of the societal expectations. And in primate, animal literature. In monogamous species, now I have done some interesting reading all the way from Minnesota to Washington in a book called A Natural History of Parenting. It is a history of parenting from the animal world perspective by Susan Allport. She does a beautiful job of looking at a variety of species of animals, birds, mammals, and making some extrapolations, some correlations to human parenting. There are a lot of instances of protection described in here, nurturing. Somebody I was talking to earlier this week is from Alaska or from the Arctic Circle. And I said, oh, you know about the emperor penguins. Emperor penguins in the Arctic Circle, which is extremely cold, as you know, the female lays the egg and the Antarctic. Yes. The female lays the egg and the male balances the egg on his feet for the time of incubation. And the males huddle in a circle, all doing this. They all are huddling and keeping this balanced on their feet. It is so cold that if the egg falls off for more than 15 seconds, the embryo freezes. So the entire time of incubation, they are holding this egg. The other interesting thing in this society is that alongside the perimeter, outside this circle of daddy penguins balancing these eggs, there are other males who are not yet sexually mature. And those sexually immature males have a strong desire to parent. In that particular animal species, bird species, the desire to parent comes before sexual maturity. So oftentimes what you'll see is as soon as the bird hatches, as soon as the penguin hatches, there's a fight from the perimeter to obtain these little birds to care for them. And often they fight so much between them that they actually kill the baby, kill the infant. Which is just an interesting an interesting thought. And as I read through this book, I think, oh, there are so many things here that I wonder if we can't learn a lot from in our human culture. And so not that that's the authority on human parenting, but I think we have to remember that we are part of a larger race. And we can also learn some things. There are a lot of animal cultures in which the community truly does raise the child. You can see that there are some cultures within the animal kingdom that are monogamous. They only, you know, only one male and female mating. But once the child is born, then it's alike in. When Musimbi was talking about the African culture, the Kenyan culture, I can't remember what portion of the culture she was mentioning at that point, where when the females get to puberty, they then go live with the aunt, and the aunt is able to parent them and lay down the law, is kind of how she was speaking it. In a different way than the parents did. That also happens in the animal kingdom. Some parenting happens in more the periphery or more of the community. So, in a lot of primate families, particularly chimpanzee families and larger primates, the fathers commonly care for the infants, looking after them, nurturing, doing those nurturing behaviors, taking the neonates soon after birth, carrying them, protecting them, and otherwise providing infant care. In our country, or in modern society, 1/4 of the infants actually prefer their fathers for comfort, and another 20% respond equally well to both parents. There are research studies that we've talked about earlier this week that talk about the importance of fathers within the parenting dyad, and that involvement actually creates higher intellectual growth, school performance, social development, self-esteem, sex role identification, and sense of family integration. And in the religious realm, males who do not have a close father relationship tend to project their angry feelings about their fathers onto God, hindering their spiritual growth. And that's probably an isolated research study that's been done and quoted here. But it is an interesting thing to think about within your congregational life. How involved are those fathers with their children, and what does that mean for their future?
Is that reading on our list here?
No. But you can take a look at this when you're done and get the reference from it to quote. The author concludes by saying she understands that this is from a feminist sociological perspective, and so that some biblical scholars may still not credit it. So she makes that disclaimer. However, she says it seems hard to avoid, even from a surface reading of the biblical perspective, that Hebrew males were positively involved in the lives of their children, with a little emphasis on fathering the males. So that's important to think about. Okay, so we're talking about family nurturance. We talked a little bit about specific parenting. But when I talk about family today, I'm just, my research with families in having them define what a family is shows that the definition is best stated like this. A family is who you think your family is. We started out in our research with all these long, involved, related by blood, related by relationship, engaged in purposeful activity, having a goal, those kinds of things. But that was a very academic definition of family. And in the families who we've interviewed, their definition is a family is who we say it is. So that's what we're going to look at today. And look at quickly what nurturance is within the family, whether it be parents and children or not. And this is a quick review for those who've already been in these sessions. What my premise is that in order to nurture the child, and these are the activities of nurturance, so you can read through those. If you can read them, I will read them quickly as well. But in order to nurture, the nurturer needs to have an ethic of caring, and I believe that I can make a pretty good case for the fact that when one takes the responsibilities that are set forth for us in Scripture, one comes with an ethic of caring to the family. There are some wonderful prescriptions for us in terms of how to live within relationship. An ethic of caring, have a positive self-esteem, have the ability to identify needs, and the nurturer has a sense of responsibility. Then, the things that are involved in nurturance are nourishment, education, protection, empowerment, praise, discipline, comfort, support, communication, acceptance, appreciation, understanding, empathy, and access, which means that the nurturee has access to the nurturer. And that is a key factor, that one has to have the other accessible to them. Whether that be that the parent needs to be accessible to the child, the spouse, the partner needs to be accessible. There's very little growth in a relationship that can happen when you are physically apart. You can stay connected in terms of email, telephone, writing, all of those kinds of things, but there is a magic or a mystical sense
that is important in terms of physical presence as well. Then the outcomes of nurturance are that this person being nurtured has positive self-esteem, creativity, intact coping ability, a sense of well-being happens within the nurturer, positive relationships, holistic health, and a caring personality. Well, that's that one. And then I wanted to place it within the context of what I'm proposing as a model to look at for family health. Now keep remembering that it could be parent-child, but it also can be whoever is in your family. And it's interesting, I think, those of you who were at the forum last night, there we proposed that there be a license for parents, and a lot of you were there, but it was soundly defeated by the crowd. But there were some things that came up in there that helped me to validate this model and think about what that means for me as a person working with the model. What I have extrapolated is that the family truly is the unit of health promotion. And by health promotion, I mean holistic health. When I talk about holistic health, I mean physiologic, I mean psychologic, cognitive health, spiritual health, emotional health, so that it is a holistic perspective. And that the family is the unit of health promotion. That oftentimes you can look at an individual within a family, and that's a solitary look. But what I'm looking at is the family as a whole. So that the family as a whole is that unit of health promotion for the individuals within it. And out of that family unit, and remember family is whoever you say it is, and you know, particularly I've not been on long-term staff here, but I would think, just from our experiences in the week that we've been here, that you establish when you're living in a long-term community such as Holden, or if you're in a work environment, and we have a member who is a work colleague of mine, who over the last couple years has spent a lot of family holidays with us, for instance. She has now become kind of a member of the family. There are ways in which that occurs in a variety of settings. So that family, I think of, if something were to happen within my family, I would call her. She would be one who I would want to make sure is there to help us as a family deal with some things. So the family then needs resources. And the resource that I tested in my master's thesis was parental locus of control, which means the sense of control that a parent thinks that they have over what's going on within the family or within the parent-child relationship. I disproved that in my thesis. So locus of control is out the window. Maybe there are some other things to look at.
Can you say that in different words? I don't understand.
Locus of control is like, if I'm an external locus of control person, I think whatever happens, happens. I have no control over it. An internal locus of control person would be a person that says, okay, I can do this and this and this. And I think what happens within my family relationship is in my control. And so I thought, you know, from just a purely theoretical perspective, that the people who were more internal locus of control would have higher nurturance scores, but it didn't happen. It was pretty even. But there were some things that did affect the nurturing scores, and those won't surprise you. Cultural differences and income differences affected the scores. So there are a lot of other things that I can look at. I have a sense from analyzing the nurturance tool that I'm developing and using that what might be even more important for parents is not the sense of control, but their sense of effectiveness. that if I, as a parent, set forth this plan, and this is the effective plan within my family, I think it will be effective. I think it will work. Not that it's going to control my children, but I think it'll be a workable plan. So that's something that I can work on. Yes?
You looked at the effect of support as, for example, the support of the congregation or the support of
social support.
Social support.
Yes, social support. I haven't yet with my work, but that is something I'll show you.
Talk to the people at the University of Washington to do that, please.
Pardon?
Will you talk to the people at the University of Washington to do that, please?
Well, I'll tell you what. In a little bit, we're going to talk about the Search Institute, which has done a lot of work. It's based out of Minneapolis. But it's done a lot of work with the importance of the community, another caring adult, the church. And so we'll get into that quickly. But what my premise is that those nurturing behaviors that occur, and now I'm not saying that every family has them, but there are some family resources that perhaps we can build within those families. And those nurturing behaviors occur. Health promotion happens in the family. Therefore, there's individual health and societal health. So a lot of times people look at it in that it creates individual health first and then family health, but my premise is that the family health has to come first, and then out of that comes the individual health. And yes.
I missed the other sessions that you taught, but on the health promotion, you mean physically as well as
spiritually, emotionally, correct. And then the outcome of non-nurturing behaviors, and some of this has been pretty well proven already. I don't have to work too hard at this part. But non-nurturing behaviors then creates family illness, which creates individual illness and societal illness. So that's that piece. Okay. And I think it's interesting then to look at what's been done by the Search Institute. The Search Institute is a group, well, let's see, it originated out of or was sponsored by Lutheran Brotherhood Insurance, and they took it on. I'm happy they took it on, because it's been a valuable project within our community as well as many other communities. And you've seen what I put out there in terms of what's important for nurturing or nurturance of children. And the Search Institute focuses on adolescents, because that's a high-risk population. But what we know is adolescents don't just happen. You know, they start, and a lot of the things that they set as goals for adolescents are things we can work on from the time our children are 0 years old. Search used to have, what they've done is the research on thousands of teenagers. And I was thinking of David last night. He was probably one of the people that filled out the form and said, I don't like this question. Because there are some questions that ask real frank things about good behaviors and risk behaviors particularly. But they have been completed by 7th, 10th, and 12th grade students within communities. Communities will choose to do the community assessment that Search conducts. So these students complete the survey. And the survey asks a variety of questions related to positive as well as negative behaviors, positive as well as negative values. And from the surveys that have been done, the Institute has developed a list of assets and a list of deficits. Assets are those qualities or those activities which, according to their surveys, protect adolescents from high-risk behavior. Risks are those which, of course, do not protect them from high-risk behavior, and indeed, are the hires behavior. What I'm going to put up are the assets. Now, there used to be 30 assets, and as life goes on, things get more complex. Search has done more surveys, started out with 20,000, I think. I think it was only about two years ago there was 20,000. Now it's up to 200,000 surveys that they have done nationwide in a variety of communities. In our community, there were 2,000 respondents to the survey. So that gives a really good sense of who our kids are and what their issues are. And I will share those results with you. But I will put up the 40 developmental assets that now have now been described by search. And it is small, I know. But I've done my best. And what they've done is categorized the external assets, those assets which are important for children to live with or adolescents to live in their community that are outside themselves. And those are, not surprisingly, quite correlated to the nurturance model that I've been talking about, support, empowerment, boundary and expectations, and constructive use of time. And then the internal assets, which an adolescent possesses within themselves, are commitment to learning, positive values, social competencies, and positive identity. So what SEARCH will do is go to a community and do the surveys, then come back to the community and say, 46% of your students feel that they have family support. 23% of your students feel that they have a caring school climate. And so they'll give you an idea of the areas you have as a community to work on. That's what I think is so nice. It is a group survey. They do not come back to individual children and individual parents and say, this is not what you're doing. You have to do this better. But it is a community assessment. So then what the community, as the community that I'm a part of in Mankato, Minnesota, has done is take a look at those positive assets and deficits in terms of planning their program. My husband, who's sitting there over there in those red shorts, can tell you that he's on the Y board, on the YMCA board. And what they have done on the YMCA board is take a look at what are the assets we can build up, what are the deficits we need to work on. So the community agencies are then taking a look at this from a community perspective and doing something different. Instead of coming up with goals from the literature, they're coming up with them from their community. And so that is having a positive impact, I believe, in our community. There is focus on family and family nurturance. I am, of course, I'm quite supportive of this program because I think it gives us a sense of there being more people involved in a child's environment than the parent and the family. Not that that's not important, but there are ways in which the community can support the parent and family. There are some changes that have been made by SEARCH, and some of the changes are the ones that I have circled. They've added 10 new assets, as well as the fact that they've altered some of the old ones. The caring neighborhood wasn't there, the caring school climate wasn't there. And all of the empowerment questions are new. Some of the boundary issues have been changed. And bonding to school has changed in terms of the young person caring about his or her school. Positive values on the bottom, integrity, honesty, and responsibility were added. In the old one, I think one of the positive values was concern for the hungry of the world. That was a very specific social justice question. Well, we knew that, you know, that wasn't tweaking all of the social justice issues, so they broadened that a bit this time. and cultural competence was added. Also, peaceful conflict resolution, personal control, and sense of purpose were added. And any of you can take this and look at this later to look at the specific activities. But I want to share with you what our results were. Give me a key to find that for a second. Has anyone else had this done in your community?
The schools accepted this and did it at the schools, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And that you have to have that involvement. Well, I don't have it here. It was one of those overhead transparencies that I don't do well with. So, but what I can tell you is what, from what I remember, is that we didn't do well in positive school climate. I think we had 26% rate of the students feeling they had a positive school climate. Positive caring school climate, and that has more to do. With more things than the teacher. It has to do with the whole school climate. We also were very low in the area of service to the community among youth, and so that is an area that's been focused on. Other adult relationships was pretty strong. Communication with parents was about 70%, so that was pretty high. Can you remember other things that were of concern that you've been working with?
Well, just the community support that's been enhanced through the different agencies in town. So they're trying to work together to provide. One of the specifics would be the city is going to provide free transportation on the city buses for kids that are under 16. It's one of the problems. They come home from school and they have no way to get around to these opportunities that are there. So the city said the way we can help is we'll make the buses available to the kids free of cost.
Yep.
So we'll transport the kids.
Right. That was a very positive outcome, and that was starting in the spring and has been going on this summer. And I've heard nothing but positive about that. Of course, you always have doubt, you know, the doubting Thomases who say, well, you know, they're just going to ride the bus and they're going to create havoc all over the city. But that's not
always good.
They are using it very constructively. So I'm very pleased with that particular. And that's, you know, that's the local bus service who has committed then to kids in the community. Yes?
Maybe you said this and I missed it, but for those that aren't familiar with the research, I think the kicker on this is that what the research shows is that the more assets kids have, the less at risk they are. But it's not which assets is cumulative. So for example, we all know kids from great families who crash and burn, and we go, how come? Well, presumably they didn't have these other assets.
Right.
Or we know kids who come out of really bad families and seem to be doing pretty well.
Uh-huh.
How come?
Well, uh-huh.
Because they got other assets that fill out. So it's not so much that it often rests on the family, it still does. But what this says to me is, look, if you've got kids with rotten families in your community, if you as a community have your act together, they don't need to be at risk.
Right, right. Right, right. And that is the premise of this this study, this program, and it is something that then the community begins to adopt when they come into the study. There are a variety of, you know, of approaches, but I think the positive outcome is that the community has a plan, has a direction to go, and then can reassess. And I don't know how frequent the reassessments are. We just had our survey in 95, and so we're just now working on those kinds of things that we need to, and we'll reassess in the future.
I have a question. Do you also see comparisons about the outcome of these tests versus California, for example, or areas where you have a high turnover? Because I can imagine, I mean, the Midwest tends, I mean, you tend to have two, third, fourth generations, while this area is like, I mean, if you go here to the west, the area I'm in right now, it's starting to see a high turnover, like every 2 to 3 years people are starting to move. It's because of the industry, how the industry is moving in. So did you see any comparisons?
We didn't look specifically community to community comparison. I'm sure Search has that information, but it's not their goal to compare, to give that us that information. I'm sure they can do that. But what they did do is compare us to national standards. And in the old plan, even 95, this is 96, the 40 assets are 96. So those of you who would be assessed at this point in time in your communities would have these assets assessed. Ours were 30. We had 30 assets. To be a healthy community, or to be a healthy adolescent, the research says that you should have 20 assets out of the 30. Okay, so that was like 64%. Out of this, you'd have to have like 26 assets would be enough out of the 40. But so it was 20 out of the 30, and in Mankato, our students had 16.3 assets on average. And the national average was 16.7. So we aren't doing so well. And that's important to think about. I mean, we think, you may think that every community, you know, has a handle on how they're doing, but I was shocked, really, to find out that we had so few. And we live in a town of 45,000 in the Midwest, with a big university in town and private college, as well as high employment rate, you know, but the focus has not been on family.
And what will the community be doing? You just mentioned the YMCAs, mm-hmm. So is that the start?
Yeah. It's not only organizations like that, but businesses as well, looking at, for instance, the businesses. What we know is from the research, too, is that students who work more than 15 hours per week start to develop some pretty negative and high-risk behaviors, not getting enough sleep, not getting good nutrition, experimenting with drugs and alcohol more, is what the research has shown. And so the employers like the Burger Kings and the McDonald's of the world in Mankato are taking that seriously in terms of not staffing their businesses with adolescents so that they are requiring them to work less hours in the school week. And that's been a significant commitment on the part of those businesses because, you know, that's in their pocket. That makes, it makes, if they have to pay those adolescents less money than they do another more experienced worker. So it makes a difference in their profit margin.
Another example of business helping is the downtown businesses were complaining because of all the kids with their skateboards. Because there's some nice hills in Mankato, so they're skating right downtown to the banks and the parking lots. So those businessmen got together and they built a skateboard park in one of the local parks and said, we don't want you skating down here because it's not safe, but here's where you can skate. And so they came together as a community to build a skateboard park for the kids. So they're not just saying, we don't want you around, we want you here at this time, but you can go here.
I want you.
Are they going there?
Yes, they are.
And now they have the city bus to get there. See, the skateboard park was way out on the edge of town and they couldn't get there. The other thing they did was to put bike racks on the front of the buses. So the kids put their bikes on the bus, they ride the bike to the bus, and then they go up there and skate.
Now, I truly believe that never would have happened before this community assessment. I mean, the other thing that happened this summer was there was a group of kids, we're Mankato, North Mankato, a group of kids in North Mankato who said, we want to play basketball. We don't have access to a basketball court. And so they went to the city council as a group of adolescents. They were seventh graders who wanted a basketball court. And they presented their case and they used some good advocacy skills. They worked, I think, with middle school counselor and presented their case. And the city council passed a resolution to build the basketball. All they want is a flat piece of cement, a pole, and a basket. City Council said, yes, we can allocate those funds. You'll have to wait, though. We probably won't be able to do it till the end of August. And of course, then they started, well, you know, what good's it going to do then? And the City Council said, well, this is our financial reality. We don't have the funds available at this time, but we will commit to you to for that point in time. And so, boy, were the, you know, they were 7th and 8th grade kids involved in the political process to make change and make a difference, and then to realize that they are living within a social system that does have restraints, but they can work with them. And I think that's a wonderful, valuable lesson for those kids. So, other thoughts? Yes?
Who decided in your city or who got together to have Search come in and do this? Because Mankato is a tiny place. I'm kind of amazed all that has happened.
Yeah. When it happened, I think we already had, we have the state of Minnesota is divided up in different regions for health care. And for health care, as well as area, actually it started out of the Area Agency for Aging. That started the regionalization and looking at what the needs were within a 9-county region. We're in a 9-county region. And out of that Region 9 project came an interest in the youth. And so then the community health program then started to discuss some of the issues related to youth, and out of the CHAP program then they pulled in the school counselors and the clergy and the community health agency and nursing faculty who were interested in adolescents, and we all just said, yes, we want this. So That is kind of how it happened. And then the funding for actually conducting the survey came from a grant from Region 9. So that's how the funding happened.
This, from a small town perspective, this survey to do for a school cost a minimum of $2,000. You go to a small town and say, we do the survey, they go, you've got to be kidding. You know, if you're in a Lutheran congregation, there is available through your Lutheran Brotherhood coordinator a coupon that a school can do this for free. Mm-hmm. And you can go, this is how it started, our congregation, our Lutheran church, went to the school and said, we would like to have this done. It can be done for free if you are interested. This is helpful information for all of us to do. And that can be a very big step depending upon the relationship between the churches and the schools. Mm-hmm. But it can start in your local congregation, right, if you're Lutheran, because you've got resources and money,
yeah,
that you can take to your community and say, going to do, which is a wonderful thing for a little church that can't pay his own building, to be able to go and be a hero in the community and say,
right, that is very true. And I have all that information here too for people who might be interested in taking this back to their communities and thinking about it in their areas. And
as well as, you know, up to 100 copies of this sort of stuff for free by asking.
Right. You can get a lot of things for free, and that is a nice benefit of connecting with them. I found my sheet. It said 76 to 77% in our community had less than 20 of the 30 developmental assets. That's a huge amount of kids. And so that's where we're working to make some changes. I think the benefit of this is that every resident in the community builds caring connections with kids. That's the idea. The schools then become a caring place, and that is a focus and a positive. And community organizations have a vested interest in putting these goals into place because it makes a difference in their future employees, in funding, in tax base, and all of those kinds of things. It's harder to get them to look at the long haul, but that is what can happen.
Yes. Excuse me, do you have recognized gang activity in Mankato?
We do. We don't talk about it a lot, but and the law enforcement people will tell you it's copycat gang activity. I'm not so sure that it is.
Do you have assigned gang officers in the schools?
We have police liaisons, but not gang officers. We have police liaisons within the school, and that happened actually before the search study was done. They went to school, have known who the police liaison officer is in their school system, but they work with the kids in a very preventative mode. A lot of what they're working on right now is, and they took from the search study, is nonviolent conflict resolution. So our police department is teaching nonviolent conflict resolution, which I think is pretty cool. You know, and they really like it too, because they are able to settle a lot of issues that could become a lot bigger when that happens. And that's not to say that we don't have those violent issues that are happening in our schools. We do.
So if they would characterize it as copycat, do they somehow think that's easier to get rid of?
I think they think it's not as pervasive, it's not as deep, it's not as broad as other cities might be. But I, you know, that was a couple years ago when I talked to them, and I think there's some things that have happened since then that have opened our eyes to a variety of things. Yes?
In the meantime,
yes.
For those of us who don't have the opportunities for the search program in our community, I think that we don't dare sit back and say,
no,
search. I want to respond to the woman over there who asked about people on the West Coast who are mobile and don't have families around the generation. We are in that kind of a congregation. We're Seattle, it's a large community, all kinds of people. We have a skateboard park, very nice. But we have a community with a number of young families, with teenagers, and no grandparents, aunts, and uncles. And we have been intentional about providing grandparent support, other kinds of support for our teenagers in our congregation. Just a matter of not going off the old folks by themselves and having a coffee, but saying something, just engaging them, just hello, how are things going?
Yeah.
A purposeful interaction with a youth, a contact we begin, for example, the grade role with some of that connectedness, because there aren't other kinds of connectednesses, but intentionally connecting with the young people in the congregation, and it's made a real nice piece. I don't know how much effect it has in, with reference to a survey, but it sure has made our congregation a family, a supportive family for the young people, and I think they feel comfortable and are participating, and that's been intentional.
And I think what we know about, what we have learned from the surveys from a variety of communities can be used. I mean, I don't think your community absolutely has to do the survey, but I do think we've learned a lot that can be positive for those communities. Somebody else?
Well, contrast that with our congregation, where I've been working with our pastor for over a year to find some kind of big brother mentor for David. Somebody that would be another male in his life. I don't care what age. I think any age would bring to him, you know, a wonderful perspective, whether he's someone who is 20 or someone who is a grandpa. There hasn't been anyone willing. I mean, David knows kind of that we're looking because I asked him if he would like it, but, you know, we're not taking him around on interviews because we don't want him to feel the rejection of, no, we can't do that. But that's been very difficult. I mean, we've been a transient family, and so although we have been there for a while, people have seen David have temper tantrums. I mean, y'all here have seen the very best of him, I can guarantee you. But there is another part of him.
Yeah.
It's remarkable, though, what he did last night.
Absolutely. His teachers will be so proud.
He was one of our piano members.
It was remarkable.
And he gave a very very profound testament to why, and we hadn't come up with this in our, we had this list of laundry list of things that we were going to require parents to do to obtain their parent license at the time that they got married. You know, they that they had to pass the parental nurturance tool. They had to complete certain scores, and they had to do a personality test, and we were going to analyze their genes to see if they had any chronic illnesses in their future that would prevent them from being a parent, and just a laundry list of things. But he came up with no drugs and alcohol during pregnancy, and he just told the whole crew that that was his background, a fetal alcohol syndrome background, and ADD. I mean, did a great job of presenting that issue. So yes, but I do think, you know, it takes, you just keep working on it, but when it becomes a congregational priority, then there might be more people who just come up and embrace that as an opportunity.
Well, it's a whole new concept.
Right.
Granted, it is. That we have, you know, interim pastors, so they don't know, you know, all the people in the congregation.
I would say take it over as a congregation.
You know, somebody who might have been with a group for 10 years.
Right.
But still, it's been interesting as he's made contacts that, you know, and the comment is, you know, I'm too busy. When would I have fun?
Right.
You know, we're asking for an hour twice a month. You know, yeah. Go have a soda, see a movie, go to a ball game. You know, just something that would enlarge his circle of people.
Another caring adult.
He's got us, and he's got paid people, and there's no one in between.
Yeah. Search talks about having three other adults in that child's life that they could go to if they had a problem. And it could be an aunt who they can call up, or a grandma, or a grandpa, or somebody else in the community. We also are a transient family. We've moved to a variety of congregations. Seems like wherever we go, there's kind of a grandparent couple that become grandparents to our children, and in a way that's very helpful for us. It happens less as your children get older.
Yes, it does. They're nice with you.
That is cute.
I was going to say, it's interesting that we've seen the best of David up here. In lots of ways, wholeness would be considered an artificial environment. But I bet if you slapped up those assets again, you would see that essentially all of the external assets exist in this community.
Yep.
You know, the boundaries and safety, the adults talk about the best of it, right down the line. I mean, this community is what provides all of a sudden all 40 assets like
right.
that. And for me as a parent, to bring my children up here, it totally changes the dynamics of my life with them. Just because I don't have to worry about all this stuff.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, are there other adult relationships? Absolutely. Positive family communications.
Right.
Well, it doesn't have to be just my biologic. I just focus all over here. You know,
right.
The boundaries and expectations, yeah. There's structured use of time, yeah. Are they empowered here?
Uh-huh.
I mean, Eric's up there playing the rattles during you know, worship. You know, and where else is he going to get to do
right.
that?
Right.
Saturday night at church.
Yeah.
You know, praise service.
Yeah.
He's up there on the bongo.
Yeah.
Well, that's very true. That is why it feels so good here for us as families trying to nurture each other. Yeah. So, well, let's create these little holdings all over, and I think that is the challenge, though. When you go back into your communities, what are the pieces of this that feel very valuable that you may not be able to totally reconstruct, but may be able to be goals for you? I want to just show you some of the things that are in the bookstore that may be helpful that you can take back to your communities or your congregations. This is 150 ways to show kids who care. It costs all of 75 cents. And it's one of those good placards for your refrigerator or your the outside, your door just before you go out in the morning. It has a lot of neat things in it. Like getting down and actually talking to the child at child's level, like all of the, a lot of the assets that I talked about. So I'll pass that around. This is a book by Search Institute that includes all of those the checklist of the assets and explains the deficits and explains the connections and gives you some real specific concrete ideas of things to do. And it's also in the bookstore. That's like $5.95. And another search resource is Tapping the Potential, Discovering Congregations' Role in Building Assets in Youth. And I think this is a very helpful piece of material for congregations to utilize. And it's also a very reasonable price.
Is at the store?
At the bookstore. Mm-hmm. Yes, I ordered them so they would be here for you. So.
Oh, yes, right. There's a shelf, right? Was the old resource?
Yeah.
Isn't it?
With my name. Right, yes. Right. And I think they're wonderful, of course, because they speak to the idea of nurturance within the family system, but also within the congregation. In fact, I think one of the things was to talk about, well, they use the word nurture a lot in their literature. That makes me happy. And then another book, which is not a Search Institute book, for those of you who are parents of younger children, this is a troubleshooting guide for parents of children ages 3 through 8, and this is also in the bookstore under my name. It's written by Carolyn Webster Stratton, who's a PhD nurse and psychotherapist who has worked with a lot of families in crisis, but also has learned from working with those families in crisis what to do on the front end. And it's a wonderful resource that's focused on specific incidents in families' lives, appropriate behavior, then reward, polite commands, consistence, I mean, just kind of general overall, what I value as sound parenting technique. So, now, one of the outcomes of the developmental assets survey in Mankato was that the schools then, at different points along the way, are taking a look at family and what family means to you. And this was a project that was done in my daughter Britta's sixth grade class this year. And this is her writing. She said to me on the way out, she knows me very well. She said, Mom, do you have everything ready for all your talks at Holden? I said, no, Britta, I don't. She knows me. She knew that I wouldn't. She said, would you like me to do the family web so I can help you out so you can have something to help me? So I said, yes, that would be wonderful. Because we had talked about this. They were given in their sixth grade, and you'll notice that there are some individual spellings here that she did herself, but the family web.
We call creative spelling, and don't worry about it.
Creative, that's right. Creative spelling.
As long as you understand.
That they were given as a group the idea of what things help families to go around, or what things help to describe what a family is. Care, types, traditions, and rules. And then this sixth grade, this group of 27 to 30 some, depending on which groups are in and which groups are out, kids came up with the spokes that go around the wheels. So that, and you will not be surprised that this was my daughter's addition to the care circle. She came home and she said, Mom, do you think nurturance would fit on the caring spoke? I said, oh yes, I think that would fit very nicely. So then they just added some things around what is care in the community or within the family, recreation, education, and behavior control they put around care. So for them, to have a caring environment in the family meant that you have to have some control over their behavior. This is a group of sixth graders. And then under rules, budget, discipline, curfew, limits and responsibilities. And then they looked at family types and said nuclear, single parent, half, I don't know what that means, foster, adoptions, and step. And that symbolizes who's in their classroom. And then under traditions, holidays, religion, food, birthdays, vacations, culture, and jobs. So that's what that group of sixth graders thought was important in the family web.
The jobs is in, go back to that.
Oh, sorry.
It's interesting that jobs is in traditions and not in care. I just think that's interesting.
Or in rules.
Yep, that's where they think it fits.
And these webs are very big, you guys. This is how we do our process writing.
Yeah. But it really is interesting how, you know, sometimes your kids don't come home and share much with you about what's happened in their day in school, but this particular project stimulated a lot of conversation between all of us who were, you know, who were struggling to look at some issues. Okay, I want to just, as we close, look at the bibliography that I have given you. And I have given it to you trying to be broader than just the parent-child, although you know there is an emphasis on it. And I have also, where I've known them, and I think I've known them most often, given you prices on those particular books. I started this last year when I was at Holden. I did a whole book tour in the library of what was here at Holden, and then I've added to it throughout the year and given it some descriptions. So not only do you have the name and the title and the price of the book, but some little, it's an annotated bibliography that gives you descriptions of the book. So hopefully that will help you as you go through and plan the things that you want to do within your communities and within your families. Any other thoughts about nurturance and family nurturance? There are lots of resources available, I think, but we have to do them. And we have to have those family focuses and family goal times. And I want to close with some quotes from the Bible. In Joshua 24, and I'll tell you also that this is on a placard that's just inside our kitchen door that some wonderful friends of ours gave to us. In fact, it was the couple that introduced the two of us for our wedding. And this is what I see every day when I leave for work, and it helps me to keep focused. Choose you this day whom you will serve, but as for me and my household, we will serve the Lord. It illustrates the relationship between God and family and puts within the context of family, the same kind of covenant that we have with our family has been demonstrated to us by God in his covenant with us as God's people. It talks about the importance of family as a larger, in the larger unit of society. And it calls us from the bondage, I think, of self-centeredness to the commitment to family. And then lastly, in Ephesians, be subject to one another out of reverence for Christ. This turns to the principle of equality, which was unlike anything known at that time in Judaic, Greek, or Roman society. It gives a sense of applying the law of love to us into our behavior within the family. Parents commit themselves to embodying the Spirit of Christ as they nurture their children in the discipline and instruction of God in a pattern of mutual support. The focus is on bringing the Spirit into the commitment of parenting and family nurturance.